Continuing interview with Wing Commander Cell, 22 September 1978, Side 2. We're talking about a difference, sorry, tape ran out. We're talking about a difference of the Germans, or if there was a difference, and you're saying there wasn't a difference, they weren't letting up, and I asked you if they were fighting this war as tenaciously as they were before, and you hesitated there.
Well, I think they were. I didn't notice any let up in their tactics, excepting that perhaps there weren't quite so many of them and that they didn't come as close to our lines as they had been. For one thing, there would be no reason for them not to be fighting tenaciously because they had a new aircraft, the Fokker D-7,
mm-hmm.
or we contended with the Fokker D-7 when it was powered by 160 horsepower, but they brought out another version of it where they had, some people say 200 horsepower, some people say 220 horsepower, which made a hell of a difference. Even with our Bentley Camel, which was considerably faster than the Clergy's and the Rhones. We were fast enough, but the Hun D-7 could outrun us.
What kind of speed when you go into a dogfight, for example? It seems now, like from today to look at it, it would seem very slow.
Yes. A dogfight, I think, with modern aircraft it's almost impossible. The speed is so great, and it takes them so long to make a turn. So they have to turn around. They have to go so many miles away from.
Mm-hmm.
By the time they got turned around, there'd be nothing left of the fight, perhaps, you see. It'd be a matter of striking away, rather than dogfight. You catch what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, in a dogfight, you just can press on and press on, yeah, until one went down, or what?
Not necessarily. You might get... For instance, my tactic used to be when I was, unless I was leading a flight, was if I was number two man on the right, say, which position I flew in quite often when not leading a flight, I wouldn't single out a target for myself right at the start. I would single out a target that was chasing and on the tail of endangering one of our own men, you see.
Cat pickup man, in other words, you're looking for the pickup, or?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And now, as I say, I've been in enough dogfights and ground strafing and other tactics to get hold on 14 different occasions. The fact that I got hold means that I must have been doing a little holding myself, you see. But
Did you get any more confirmations during this?
No.
I gather from your attitude you didn't care either.
No, not particularly. I wasn't one of these bloodthirsty guys.
Were there many of those around?
I don't think so.
What about these guys with these impressive kill records after the name, you know, 14, 20 kills after the name and that? Were they just great pilots, or?
Well, who am I to say?
Well, you were there.
Well, I was there, but...
you have a better say than I have, sir. None of us has a say, but no, I just... Just out of interest.
No, I wouldn't deprecate any guy with a big kill record, just because he had that nature. That was his nature.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to say that I wouldn't shoot the guy down, or if I had the opportunity, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get into a dogfight at 16,000 or 18,000 feet, 15,000 or 16,000 feet, let's put it that way, because you haven't got much left.
You're hanging on your profit.
Yeah. The fight starts, and you hit somebody, and he goes down, and you fire at somebody, and he goes down into a spin, and you lose track of him because you're so damn busy looking around behind you. And by the time you look for the guy, he's not there, you know. Just the fact of taking around and checking your own position as far as getting shot at is concerned. Primarily, the idea was, as far as I'm concerned anyway, not to get shot down.
Survive.
Hey?
Be a survivor?
That's right. So, I figured I didn't have time to even try to follow this guy down to the ground, because you're old man on the totem pole then.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly with these Fokker D7, the extra power that they had, they could go into a spin at your level. You might have taken a shot at him. He'd go into a spin, and at the bottom of the spin, he would do three turns to the spin and up again and hang on his prop like that, you see.
Just power his way out, or?
Mm-hmm. And power his way into you, too.
Mm-hmm.
Spin his way out and power himself in. Yeah.
Well, how did Armistice feel then?
Oh, Armistice felt fine. We thought, well, goodness me, the first thought was, well, this is what we've been fighting for. And of course, everybody got tight that night.
Now, did you return to Canada right away, or what was...
No, I stayed over there for some time. I wanted to go up with the Army of Occupation. But not to sign on for 2 years, which we had to do, you see. I didn't want to sign on for that long, so an opportunity came up after our squadron broke up in February of 19. I flew the last aircraft out, and that was the wing colonel of 13th Wing, a fellow by the name of Scott, had the kept a Lerone camel in one of our hangars, and he'd come and have a rare flight. He'd take a rare flight just to keep his hand in.
Mm-hmm.
I flew it out of the squadron up to the aircraft park that was taking them and wrecking them. You'd know the prop no sooner stopped turning over than the axes went through your wings.
The body?
The great bonfire going on the edge of the air. Oh, yes. It was just a crime.
Why did they just wreck the planes?
No further use for them.
They couldn't give them to ex-pilots, or?
No.
No. No, armies don't work that way.
No. No.
Beautiful plane.
Yes. And something that you had babied along all the way along, and it was your aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
It was what you had it while you were flying, you see. And your airmen would that take pride in.
I'll sit up all night fixing it.
Yeah.
It pretty much says it, though, I guess, eh? They got it shut off and they put an axe through the wing.
Yeah. And then onto a bonfire on the edge of the eardrum.
It's crazy. Now, you stayed with the RAF then?
No. I did get my trip up to Germany on a draft conducting job, conducting drafts of men from Germany to England for demobilization, and other drafts from England up to Germany for the Army of Occupation. And after several short draft trips, I got this one up to Germany, and that was fine. There are stories in connection with that, too, that are not of any real interest. That thing is, the orderly officer of the day who received the draft of men that I brought up was our old armament officer. So we had to sample the rum ration that night. And on the way back from Düren, just outside Cologne, we heard that our old CO, Cyril M. Leman, God rest his soul, he died just a couple of years ago, was in charge of a squadron of snipes, which was going to be the successor to the Camel, you see, and already was starting to be. They had two squadrons of them out in France at the time of the armistice. Anyway, we heard that he was there outside of Charleroi, so we hitched a ride from the station to Charleroi, and we were welcomed with open arms, of course, and I don't know how the question came up, but the upshot of it was that Le Mans let Patton and myself each take up a snipe and have a flight.
A little fly around, eh?
Yes, yes. So that's my last flight, was a snipe. Took it up for, 20 minutes? Something like that, yeah.
And so then what? Then you, mustered out and went back to Canada, or?
Yes, eventually, yes. I had visited with my relatives. Mother had several cousins and aunts there, and my father's sister and her family were there, living in London. So I visited around for a while. The Red Cross had several convalescent homes, or homes that were donated by wealthy people, and for instance, an implement manufacturer named Samuelson lived in a great buddy, almost like a hotel, in Yorkshire. Four of us stayed up there for 2 weeks, all free, gratis.
Well, good, nice.
And yes, we were just taken in as members of the family.
Then what? Then when you finished here, you went back to Canada. You went just out.
Yeah. Oh yes. went back to Canada and was out, and then got a final check in the mail after about a month after he had arrived home. That was it. And the last I heard until until the Second World War was going to be imminent. It hadn't started yet, but I had written to the Air Ministry to find out what my status was, because I did this in 1939, way back in about May, April or May, pointing out that it was obvious that there was going to be an outbreak of hostilities, and I'd like to know what my status was. And they gave me a very brief but concise statement of my responsibilities and conditions, and I was none. Nothing was expected of me at all. But at the same, in the same letter, I had volunteered in the event of the hostilities did.
Now this be what's the Canadian.
My services would,
This to the Canadian Air Ministry?
No, this is to the Air Ministry in London.
RAF?
Yes. The RCAF didn't know anything about me then, you see. So, I got a letter back telling me that in keeping with the others in the same class, I had been demobilized, actually, at in 1921, and that entitled to rank of honorary lieutenant, and then they sent another letter thanking me for my offer of services in the event of hostilities. That was all there was to that.
But when war broke out in 39, then what?
Well, then I applied to the Royal Canadian Air Force.
And then you were what made what? Squadron leader?
Or? No. A flying officer. Pilot officer.
Pilot officer.
Pilot officer.
Had to start at the bottom again.
Yes. And promoted to flying officer. No, I was appointed flying officer, right? Commissioner's flying officer, right out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And into the wars of wing commanders.
Yes, I went up in stages from to flight lieutenant, squadron leader, and then wing commander.
No, as a
picked up a mention in dispatches on my way.
Oh, very good.
Oh, I did the one I got. I'm a little unique, perhaps. A guy with no other decorations, but a mention in dispatches in each war.
So you got what, the oak leaves on both?
That's right. That's the First World War. I don't know where the other one was.
1418, Royal Air Force. It's mentioned in a dispatch from Field Marshal Sir Douglas Haig. Oh God, look at the initials after his name, would you?
Yeah.
She was KTGCB AM, I guess. GCVOKC something E, dated 16th March 1919, for gallantry and distinguished service in the field, I have it in command from the King to record His Majesty's high appreciation for the services rendered. And it's signed by the Secretary of State for War.
You didn't recognize the signature?
No, right. And that's not Churchill.
Yes, that's right. Looks like Underhill there, doesn't it?
It looks like Underhill, but it's signed by Churchill.
Yes.
It was dated the War Office. 1 July 1919. Oh, goodness. That's great.
Well, this, you may wonder if the date 1919.
Well, they weren't going to bother issuing them during the hostilities.
No. And this was the result of a recommendation for the DFC, which was not granted.
Not forthcoming.
I didn't, no. My show didn't merit it in comparison with the others that came up with the rations. So many to a wing, you see, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But Mother had this framed when it came.
Well, I think it's pretty worthwhile. Well, I've taken too much of your time already, sir.
Well, you hasn't worried me any. I hope.
Well, I think the stuff we got is very good, and thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome.